Thank you very much, Boris. I appreciate the introduction. It's a real pleasure to be here this afternoon. As Boris mentioned, I'm going to be talking about breeding resistant sugarcane for managing stalk borers, in particular the sugarcane borer. By now you have a really good sense of the importance of stem borers as important pests of crops. It's the most important insect pest of sugarcane in Louisiana. For many years, this pest has been controlled by a multi-tactic pest management system. In this slide, we see the four components of the pest management system and the relative contributions that each one makes to season-long control of the sugarcane borer. You can see also that resistant varieties is a very important component of this pest management system, contributing roughly 25% of the season-long control of this insect. Unfortunately, the release of resistant varieties remains to be a hit or miss proposition. Economic realities, and I think to a great degree some individual biases amongst researchers and not science, is what has contributed to this ongoing situation. Now, in 1933, T.E. Holloway and W.E. Halley introduced a brave new world, in which they reported in the Sugar Bulletin, which is a trade journal for the American Sugarcane League, that there appears to be actual resistance in certain varieties to the cane borer. These two slides, the pictures are scans of some early photographs of Holloway and Halley circa 1933 doing some penetrometer work in sugarcane, looking at the role of rind hardness plays as a resistance mechanism. Now, Holloway further reported in 1935, he even pushed the envelope further, in which he said that heredity, or he broached the question of whether heredity had anything to do with resistance to the borer. He further stated that plant breeders and the entomologists have never realized that their cooperation may solve the borer problem. And he suggested that the right plan would be for entomologists to determine resistance and plant breeders to use such varieties in their crosses. Unfortunately, there are those early on who took great issue with this observation. P.N. Anand, who was in charge of cereal and forage insects investigations in the USDA, wrote a rebuttal shortly after that, in which he stated that the results of the work on which this article is based, although possibly indicative, cannot in any sense be considered conclusive. And he further stated the article referred to above was not approved by, nor does it represent the views of the USDA. So talk about being chopped off at the knees by your supervisors. About 50 years later, this attitude continued to persist, and a letter by Kenneth Cahill, who was the president of the American Sugarcane League, that he wrote that representing the league to Dr. Ed Kendrick, who was the deputy administrator of ARS, in which the league expressed utter dismay that the ARS would want to redirect the entomology effort at HOMA, where I work, to be 100% host plant resistance. They further stated that there are doubts about the effectiveness of selecting for host plant resistance, and further stated that any possible results would be in the distant future. So these attitudes created a situation that for many, many years, the only host plant resistance work that was done in Louisiana, for the most part, was simply the categorization of varieties as they move through the stages of the selection program, and particularly in the outfield stage before they were being released to the growers. And these are some typical data which were generated, in which varieties were just categorized based on present board internodes. Now, these data were very useful in the fact that they would allow growers and consultants to effectively manage varieties that were released. However, they were not used in any way to determine whether a variety was dropped from the program or if, in fact, it was even continued. Now, we believe that the most effective way to change this was to move from, not from the end, but to move to the beginning of the breeding program, in which parental selection would play an important role, in which if you, early on it was shown by work at LSU that sugarcane borer resistance was of a quantitative nature, and that in a biparental cross, if at least one of the varieties, either the female or the male, was resistant, then you shifted the mean of the progeny to a more of a resistant direction. So what we did is we began a modified recurrent selection program, in which our goal was to increase the level of resistance amongst some parental lines which had near commercial yield, so that the plant breeders could use these in their crosses and therefore increase the frequency of resistance that would be moving through the program, so that hopefully by the time a variety was released that it would at least have a moderate level of resistance. Now in this slide, what we looked at, or what I'm showing, is a brief outline of our recurrent selection program. It's approximately a 7-year program, and it's conducted concurrent to the commercial breeding program. Now this slide summarizes about roughly 20 years of recurrent selection for sugarcane borer resistance. Each data point is the mean of all of the varieties that which we are evaluating compared to the percent bore joints of the susceptible standard at that particular time. So you can see that even though the data points do move, fluctuate quite a bit, you can see that we do have a negative slope, and that we have, over approximately 20 years, we have increased the level of resistance in our parental material, at the same time maintaining at least a near commercial yield. Our cycle one selection began when we were just intercrossing the most resistant commercial standards that we had available. By about 1992, we were beginning to cycle in some of our first, what we call RSB material, and began making crosses with those. And by about the year 2000, we had begun what I considered our second cycle of recurrent selection, so that all the parents that we were intercrossing with had originated from our recurrent selection program. Now, we also conducted a number of quantitative genetic studies. Now, the results from these genetic studies are very important because they help give you some direction on how to develop effective selection strategies. Now, we looked at some narrow sense heritability as well. And narrow sense heritability is important when you're considering parental selection. This would be the sexual phase of variety development when you're picking your parents and looking at how their progeny will perform. And we found that for damage ratings and also for percent damage internodes, that we had a very high level of narrow sense heritability, which infers that we have a high level of additive gene action. So that's very important with the strategy that we were working with. We also looked at broad sense heritabilities, and broad sense heritabilities are important in the asexual stage after we've made initial selection in seedlings, and then when we propagate in the asexual stage from one stage of selection to the next. That's when broad sense heritabilities is very important. And we have found that the broad sense heritabilities for sugarcane borer was also quite high, and that we found that percent bore damaged internodes is the most effective single trait to reduce sugarcane borer damage. So these quantitative studies, these heritability studies, they make nice publications, but in many respects they're highly theoretical. So we wanted to look at this in a real world situation, sort of to validate this strategy. So what we did is we conducted an experiment that we looked at a number of biparental crosses, a range of biparental crosses from resistant by resistant with some intermediate resistant. We also looked at resistant by susceptible and susceptible by resistance, looking at any cytoplasmic effects that we may have. And then we looked at a number of susceptible by susceptible crosses. Now we used best linear unbiased predictor values rather than actual percent bore damage internodes, because they tend to normalize some of the messy data that we had, and also helped us interpret our year-to-year, make year-to-year comparisons. Now, the effects are represented by the blood values for each cross relative to the grand blood mean of zero. So if you had a negative blood value, that would indicate that the cross would be considered resistant relative to the grand mean, while positive values would indicate a susceptible cross. So you can see, for the most part, if you make a bipinnal cross with resistant parents, then their progeny, the mean of that progeny, will be resistant. And if you make a susceptible bisusceptible, then you're going to have a high level of susceptibility in those crosses. So that does tend to validate the approach that we were taking in an effort to try to affect this change in susceptibility in our sugarcane borer varieties. Now, one thing we had become worried about are correlated responses. Now, that's the effect of selecting severely for one trait, the effect it has on another important character. In our case, that's sucrose yields. We began to look at these prototypical resistant plants that we seem to be accumulating through repeated phenotypic selection. They had tight leaf sheath, they had high internode rind hardness, they had pith and high fiber. Now, Grovois and Milligan in 1992 did a path coefficient analysis for fiber content on recoverable sugar and found a negative value, inferring that there's a slight negative relationship between fiber, i.e. resistance, and sucrose yields. So that got us concerned about, well, if we're developing these resistant parental lines, how good of parents are they? Is a plant breeder going to want to use these in their crosses? Because if I've been told, that's really their most important real estate, is that's the cans that they have on their crossing carts. So they can't cross with trash. So we started looking at some advancement rates, and this data summarizes those results for three stages in the commercial breeding program. And what we see is it appears that RSB progeny are just as likely to be selected as progeny in the other crosses. Unfortunately, the percentage of RSB crosses are so low at this particular time that they tend to be diluted out, and very few of them are actually signed and have been become commercial varieties. So the solution to that is just to increase the number of RSB crosses that the commercial breeding exists in the commercial breeding program. So what are the prospects for the future? Well, obviously the ultimate goal of any effective sugarcane breeding and selection program is the development of new varieties capable of producing sugar. Sugar yields is a driving force in the Louisiana Sugar Variety Development Program. However, even without increased yield potential, new varieties may lower cost of production because of improved milling, agronomic, and our yield stability, such as pest resistance and stress tolerance. Now, the loss of an important insecticide such as Confirm or the invasion of the Mexican rice borer may provide that impetus to increase the number of resistant crosses which are being made in the commercial program. Now, we've also seen a level of cross resistance which exists between the sugarcane borer and the Mexican rice borer, particularly in these RSB material. So this RSB material could provide a very good starting point for developing varieties which are resistant to the Mexican rice borer. And also, sugarcane, I think, is an ideal candidate for transgenic works. I think it could play a very important key in the future. Sugarcane is an ideal candidate for improvement via genetic engineering. Conventional breeding is very difficult due to the very complex ploidy of the variety and a very large genotype by environment interaction. Reasonably efficient sugarcane transformation systems are available. And finally, refined white sugar is the most chemically pure food derived from plants and has been found to be free from DNA and proteins expressed from induced transgenes. And thank you very much.
We have 3 minutes for questions. Are there any questions?
Yes, Al.
Yeah, Bill, I'm wondering, you mentioned the crop resistance do you see as being the basis for that? What's the content?
Alan asked if I had any ideas about the basis of our mechanism, I'm assuming, responsible for that cross resistance. And what I feel like is that probably the same thing. You're looking at internode Rhine hardness of those target internodes, and you're also looking at probably fiber as well. Now, as I said, I didn't want to infer this as a perfect relationship because there's still, we do see examples where one's resistant for one and not the other, and vice versa. But I think there's a fair amount of similarity between those two species that one would assume that some of the same mechanisms would be acting on both species.
Any other questions?
Is there an environmental impact on those two factors, the fiber content and the Rhine hardness?
The question was any, I guess, genotype by environment interaction on these traits. I think yes, there could be on certain years that internode may elongate. If there's plenty of rain, it may elongate quicker, and so that internode may be slightly more susceptible. And I think pith and some of those other things have a large genotype by environment interaction. So I think to some extent, yes, you're right.